I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is your official Leguizamarama spoiler warning. If you have not seen the 2018 drama mystery thriller Nancy and you really want to see it, good luck fucking finding it if you're in Australia. That was so hard. That was such a slog. I saw the trailer.
You are introducing like a conversation point in the spoiler warning.
No, what I'm saying is if you wanted to see Nancy, then you can relate to this in Australia. I saw the trailer. I was like, that looks sick. I want to watch that. Yeah. And then it was so difficult to find it.
Yeah.
But we did. And if you're waiting to find it so you can watch it and you don't want the ending spoiled, then probably don't listen to this podcast once we start talking about the film. But once you finished watching the film and you want to come back and you want to listen to it, jump back on. And
mention the like long intros we do as well.
We do really long intros.
So we're not going to talk about the film in that
for like a good long chunk. And then what's going to happen is there'll be an ad.
Yeah.
Listen to the ad and then stop listening because that's when we start talking about the film probably. All right, that's it.
Thank you. Do you have anything else you want to discuss in the spoiler warning?
No, I had a really great morning. I slept really well last night for the first time in days, which was really good.
Oh, good.
I had a full solid 8 hours. Took my dog for a walk this morning, got a coffee, dropped my coffee, but then the person who made my coffee saw that and made me another coffee.
The first half hour we could talk about it with Maggie, but you sure you want to blow it on them?
No, that's fine. That's the spoiler warning. Enjoy the podcast ep and we'll bye.
Peace. I hate the word.
Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, a podcast where two friends watch everything starring their favorite actor who they thought was a character actor, they realized was a lead, and for some reason he doesn't get those leading parts as much as he should. Who knows why? I'm one of those co-hosts. My name is Zachary Ruane.
Did you just discover how difficult it is to say your name?
No, when I was deciding whether I would go, you might know me as alternating how I'm credited as between Zach Ruane and Zachary Ruane, because I think Zachary Ruane has a bit of je ne sais quoi, but Zach Ruane is a lot easier to say. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host Mitch.
Mitch from Baywatch.
Mish Witchrup, who you might know from.
I have always tried to push the Mish Witchrup thing in all the work I've ever done. However, I did a student film in 2013 that billed me as Michelle Witchrup.
Oh.
And now I have two IMDb pages.
Oh, that can be consolidated, I'm sure.
Not when you're at the level I'm at. No one cares to consolidate my shit.
Well, lucky for you, our guest today is the queen of consolidation. Whether it's your super or your IMDb page.
That's why I'm here.
I don't know anything about whether you can consolidate or not. You might know Maggie for her work collaborating with such people that we have we've collaborated with, such as Ben Russell and Xavier Michaelides.
Michaelides.
You also might know her as a writer on At Home Alone Together and Hard Quiz. It is our honour, nay, our privilege to introduce our guest this week, Maggie Luke. Hello, Maggie.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, Maggie. Never has two Hamishes ever needed an Andy so bad in our lives. We discovered very early on in creating this podcast that Zach and I are two Hamishes trying to develop something, and you need an Andy.
I'll tell you what happens when two Hamishes do a podcast together. It stays a podcast. It doesn't become a national radio show. We are we'll take a Zoe Foster Blake, but we are looking desperately for an Andy right now.
I'll take it. Andy's great. He's, you know, I'll rein you both in on a fun and zany podcast.
Yeah.
No, you're like that's what we need. Is we need someone who's like as fun and zany,
yeah,
but knows to like
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Let's bring it down a bit.
Yeah. Something like the concept of consolidating an IMDb
okay.
is so deeply petrifying for me because it just seems so difficult. Whereas I'm sure you hear that and you're like, just send an email.
But do you know what? I would say more than that, maybe.
Okay.
Andy doesn't consolidate IMDbs.
Andy would be able. I've worked with both of them and they're brilliant. Andy is a genius, brilliant comedian, but also fucking amazing producer.
Yeah, no, and that's, I know Andy.
He'd probably
as well,
consolidate your IMDb and Super at the same time, but do like the IMDb with his left hand.
But my thing is more than that, right? So there's lots of people that can consolidate IMDbs. The magic of an Andy we've realised, and I think the thing running through your head right now mm-hmm. is talking about consolidating IMDbs the best use of our time and the funniest conversation to be having? That's a good Andy.
Well, I...
you know, hey, instead of that, maybe let's talk about...
Whereas if you throw a bunch of Hamishes together, we're talking about consolidating IMDbs for about 3 or 4 hours as we lose listenership and credibility.
Actually, that makes me think we are two Mission Zacks in need of a Hamish or an Andy.
Yeah, probably.
Let's make this a journey and try and get Andy in on one of your episodes and see if this actually works.
I've not met Andy. You've both worked and met with Andy. Would love that though. So
to
let's
meet with Andy.
I'd love
to
organize
a meeting with Andy.
I reckon we can organize that. He loves films. He's a great guy.
Yeah, but would he love Johnny? Would he love to be on
Everyone
this pod?
Everyone loves Johnny Legs, and no one wants to be on this pod.
It's so true,
Maggie. Yes. What do you know of Johnny Leguizamo? And it's all right if you don't. That's why we picked him.
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And what is it? The restaurant? What was it? Restaurant? What was
the restaurant one. Is that, that's what it's called.
It's called the restaurant, is it?
No, it's called The Chef.
The Chef.
It's called Chef.
Or The Menu.
The Menu, that's it.
He's in The Menu.
The Menu.
He's in a couple of restaurant films now. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's a thing. Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. I personally think Australia really doesn't embrace character actors.
Oh.
I happen to be married to one of the best ones in the country.
Yeah.
And I think...
Yeah. I happen to be one of the most middling ones.
I happen to want to be one so bad.
I think I'm a huge fan of character actors. They're so much more interesting to watch. Oh,
yeah, you should definitely get onto some of his stuff that where he's like the leading man stuff though. It's really like equal parts like so beautiful and so depressing. Because all his leading man stuff is stuff you don't hear about.
Yeah, I would love to watch that. Just, you know, flick it through. Where's the IMDb page?
It's everyone's. Did you watch? Has anyone here seen Fast X yet? The new Fast and Furious?
No.
Everyone's really pleasantly surprised by who plays the lead? No, who plays the main bad guy? Aquaman. Jason Momoa.
Mm.
He really goes for something big. He goes for something really big and interesting and heightened. And everyone's like, wow, he can really do it. And he can.
Mm.
But I'm like, you know who would have been better? Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
John Leguizamo. Yeah. Like, like he's good for someone so attractive. Mm.
Not for me.
But also.
You're not a Jason Momoa fan?
No.
Okay.
I don't like long hair.
I don't either.
Just really like hairy men with long hair.
I feel
you're mid length. This is long. This is long.
No, but I would love to cut my hair.
You got to go back to LA
to this. Yeah, for my hairdresser.
To your hairdresser in LA.
Yeah,
that's the most Hollywood thing I've ever heard.
Yeah,
get
literally.
In LA.
But she's in West Hollywood. Yeah. It is very funny. So I think I've talked about this on the podcast. But yeah, I have always struggled to find a good hairdresser because I'm a boy and I didn't know that you just go to girl hairdressers because it's a very gendered world.
Mm.
And I used to go to barbers and they'd like just not know how to cut long hair because they never do it.
Mm.
I was so disappointed with my haircuts and I'd always get my haircut just before photos. So like for the first 5 years of Auntie Donna's career, our posters would just have me with like this Carol Brady, like
Bob.
Yeah. And then I had to get it cut just before the Netflix show, and I was like, I got to make sure it doesn't look cut. It has to look like I grew it out to this. And then I got a recommendation on a recommendation. And then I finally found a hairdresser I loved, but in a country I'm not often in. And I was like, this is like the greatest tragedy of all time.
Your hair is depending on your success.
That's, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, and then I was even at one point going like, oh, maybe, you know, if I get it cut at the start of every time I'm here. Yeah. And I was like doing the maths, and then COVID happened.
Oh.
And I know.
When?
That it was bad for other people.
What are you talking about?
Oh, so COVID was like
when
this.
When did it happen?
Sometimes I don't read the news.
So 2020 happened COVID? In 2020.
Is it COVID?
COVID. Well, it's COVID-19.
Oh, right. So there's that other one. COVIDs, yeah,
right? But I'm talking about the one that started in 19, but it really took off in 20. Mm. And that happened. And it was bad for a lot of people. You probably haven't heard about it.
Oh, this is ringing a bell. It had something to do with Tom Hanks.
So Tom Hanks got it.
Oh, he got it.
I thought he brought it here.
Yeah, I thought he made it.
No, I so,
Tom Hanks made it.
I mean, he's been making some weird choices.
Yeah. You're talking Elvis. You're talking that one about Mr. Robinson. And then he made COVID.
He just thought he'd give COVID a go.
I bet you, fuck it, I swear, I bet you each a hunji buck that he makes a movie about COVID, though. That is the most Tom Hanks film I've ever heard of.
He's on a downward spiral, Tom.
Isn't he?
You reckon? I reckon he's just like, you know what? I'm going to just do whatever.
Hold on a second, Maggie. I'm pretty sure I saw you about a month ago, 2 months ago.
Was I talking about Tom Hanks?
I think you and I had a real passionate conversation about Tom Hanks. I hadn't seen you in a while.
Yeah.
Oh, saw you. We spoke passionately about Tom Hanks in the rain.
Oh, yes. Oh, we did.
And then
we had similar opinions.
Very similar opinions.
So just rehashing that.
He doesn't listen. Go for it.
Okay. He might. You never know.
Say hi to Rita for us.
Yeah, Rita would listen to all of it.
I've got Mish and I share the collective agreement that you can't get to that stage of Hollywood, that king of Hollywood, being a nice guy.
Oh yeah.
And so I want the documentary after he dies. Do you know the real Tom?
Like
Hanks?
The Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Reveal. Like what the real reveal? What was he really like?
My big issue is, I don't like that he's always playing the good guy, like wholesome, patriotic type.
I think.
I'd love to see him play a villain. Now, you can argue that in Elvis he was, but that was some of the worst shit I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it wasn't Tom Hanks.
He needs to play a villain. I was thinking about this. I love this conversation, because I was thinking about exactly this a little while ago where I was like, because he's doing a lot of that. I think he's had the same moment that you've had. I think he's gone, I don't want to be burdened by this. Because he says in interviews, I'm grumpier than people realize. Like, he keeps kind of putting it out there that he's not as nice as people think. Mm. And he keeps taking on roles that are not nice, like Elvis and this Man Called Otto thing.
Mm. You're just trying to break the cycle.
But I think what he has to do, I was thinking about this, is he has to do something. It's the same thing Robin Williams did when he played all the psychopaths in like 1 hour photo. He has to play a part, and Tom Cruise in Magnolia, he has to play a part that taps into everything people like about him. The fact that he's inoffensive, that he's charming, that he's like affable, and it's like a serial killer that uses those things, or a CEO that is charming but is like fucking people.
Like a remake of American Psycho, but instead of Christian Bale, it's Tom Hanks aged 75.
Like, because I didn't see American Psycho. Like, I didn't see A Man Called Otto, but I'm pretty sure like the whole thing was he's really grumpy, but he's actually nice.
Really nice guy.
It's like, well, of course it is. It's Tom Hanks. Like, you have to start with, this is a nice guy, but there's something dark underneath it.
Mm.
That's my theory. That's my big top. Is this valuable to you as Tom Hanks haters?
No, I don't hate him.
No, I don't. It's not that I hate him. It's that I think I've clocked him.
That's exactly right, Mish. Yeah. It's gone on too long.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I think you're completely right, Zach. He's got to take a role where he uses all of those charming elements, but something's a little off.
Yeah.
And that'll feed into our doubts as the viewers and prior Tom. I mean, like, I went back and watched Philadelphia the other day.
Yeah,
it's a crook film.
It's funny you bring that up. It on is. This
it's a rough film, but I feel like it's about.
Would you like to know just very very quickly a little trivia about that film? Very very quick.
Please.
You know Antonio Banderas in that film?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was originally cast as John Leguizamo.
Ah, what a loop!
But John Leguizamo turned it down to do Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, John! If you
imagine.
You're listening, John. What
John.
Oh, he's come on. Two of my iconic. Anyway, go on about Philadelphia.
Oh, no, no. There's not much to say. It's just it's a great film. It's very Hollywood, though. You go back and watch it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's all of his movies, I feel. After the 80s, after he'd established himself from doing Big and Splash. Splash is sick. That one about Daryl Hannah as a mermaid?
It goes on a long time.
Is it long?
It's long. It's a long. It's a big splash.
It's a real big splash.
She keeps on splashing.
But how fucking keeps like, splashing?
Yes, all right, splashing. You splash, I get it.
Daryl Hannah in the 80s is like one of those people that you're just like, fuck your, like how does anyone walk around the world looking like that? Like just Daryl Hannah is the most stunning person.
And she's got her name round the wrong way.
Facts, yeah. I think that Tom Hanks has made some really, really great movies. I'm just a bit sick of the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think he is too. Yeah, I genuinely think the weird choices that he's currently making are because he's sick of the last 10 years as well.
Did you see that that TMZ clip of him losing it at Paps?
Yeah, for knocking over Rita.
That was, potential Ellen DeGeneres tipping point.
But then it played in his favour because everyone was like, well, they were being rude to his wife.
Yeah, and he's a family man and he will stop at nothing to protect his
wife. And also I was like, I watched that clip in context. I was like, yeah, fuck those guys.
There's a clip of Tobey Maguire of a similar ilk. Where he's in a car surrounded by Paps, like absolutely surrounded, trying to get out of a car spot, and he's going to hit this car if they don't move because he can't see anything. And he's like, guys, move, I can't see anything. Guys, move, I can't. And then he opens up the door of the car and he's like, get the fuck out away. You're going to hurt somebody. Fuck off. And then, like, the headlines are like, Tobey Maguire loses it. So it's like, well, of course he's losing it. What a shitty. Paps are shit.
Yeah.
Paps are shitty people.
Now that's a professional best friend there, isn't it?
Sorry?
Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Professional best friend.
In all the movies? 100%. Is that what you're saying?
Well, just in life. Like, what's he done lately? All you do is hang out with Leo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Professional. And I think he's single these days.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah. I think he's single.
Really?
Yeah,
Tobey Maguire.
Tobey Maguire's single.
It's like being Leonardo DiCaprio.
I think he's very happy. I have a feeling that Leonardo DiCaprio. Now I do.
Do you reckon?
I think he's one of those people. This is my little. I think Leonardo DiCaprio is one of those people that will never be happy. Like it's always just.
You're going to work with him soon. He's so paranoid the whole time that he's heard this.
No, but then I'll work with him. I'll be like, tap into that, Leo. I'll try and bring it up in conversation. Like, see, I said it to your face as well.
I have
a
feeling.
At the little table.
And hey, Leo, if you're listening, correct me if I'm wrong. I think that you do the roles you want to do. I think you have total freedom to choose. You never want for work. And the roles that you choose are really like ones that you read and you want. I think when you're not doing that, you're sitting on beaches with supermodels and Tobey Maguire just having nice bevs and getting a bit chub. I think that that's sick.
I was just going to say, he cops a lot of slack for the dating thing. But I think if I was a 40-year-old millionaire superstar, movie, can do whatever I want, environmental activist and single, I would date 20-year-old male supermodels.
Yeah.
Mm. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, but that would be like Samantha, you know?
I did buy some big earrings the other day.
I would 100% just live on a boat in the sun, getting a bit chub. Having lots of sex with and hanging out with Tobey Maguire. I'd do that if I was a multimillionaire.
I think, you know, I don't think anyone's happy. But but of all the stars, the person that I think is most content, I would say is probably an Adam Sandler.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's doing everything you're saying. Mm. It would be stressful. He had to do the big Netflix deal. It's like he has to navigate a career and everything. It would be very stressful at that level. But I think he's gone, I have my legacy. I think he was like, I have my legacy. I think he hit that at the late 90s. I think he was like, I'm good with my leg. I'm good with who I am. I'm good with how I'm going to be remembered. And then, like, you know, he dropped that 100% Fresh.
Uncut Gems?
Well, he did Uncut Gems and he also
his special. Stand Up Special.
He just occasionally will drop something to be like, just so you know, I'm really good.
That was I think that's in my top five stand-up specials.
Incredible.
So I've watched it so many times.
If you love a stand-up special, sorry to keep bringing it back to our old mate John. If you love a stand-up special, no shit, watch Freak.
Freak is great.
Okay,
it's,
great. That's,
it's my number one. It literally jumped to the top. It's so good.
But it's also really subtle. He doesn't do anything showy. Spike Lee directed it.
Right.
And it's just like handheld cameras, nothing fancy except for one shot.
Yeah.
But that's the charm of it. It's like, and whenever people talk about specials in our world, the concept is either Crane, you know, sort of thing, or really highfalutin. And it's like his special is such a great example of how to capture the energy of a live show. It's really good.
Do you think, like, even with Sandler's special, it sounds like he might have been almost, from what you describe, a bit inspired by that?
Well, I think what Sandler did was, like, that special is just an amazing. Like, what I love about his special is, like, how it says something.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of, I love the idea that the way it's chosen to be filmed is saying something. There's, like, a creative choice that's not in the, it's not in the show, it's in the.
The filming of.
Filming of it, that which I love.
The commitment joke he did about Grandma's choking, Here Comes a Hero. Remember that? Do you remember he sings that song and it just keeps going? He's like, I'm a hero. And then he comes and fucks it up every single time. It's just pure commitment.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing about Adam Sandler is you can see him breaking. Like that. Yeah. He still holds it. He's not like Fallon, which just breaks all the time. It's like you can see him going.
He tries to hold it.
Tries to hold it. Yeah.
Is that the one where they show the shots of the audience not enjoying it?
Yeah.
That is one of the most genius things I've ever seen. To be like, here, like, the joy of this piece is that when you're sitting in an audience, if you're on board, it's better that the person next to you hates it. It's 100%. Funnier that the person next to you hates it. So to go, well, then we'll throw in a few shots of the people hating it.
I think, again, I don't know him, obviously. I've never spoken to Adam Sandler. But I get the kind of feeling that he works for fun now.
This is what I was going to loop back around to, is he does these things very occasionally just to remind you all that he is really good, to remind you that he can do this stuff.
Yeah.
I think he'd love to win an Oscar, but it's like largely he's like, hey, I'm really good. Anyway, I'm going to go just make millions of dollars making trash that no one is going to watch for millions of dollars.
So I can hang out with my five best friends.
And pay my friends millions of dollars and go and just have like – I love that. I love that he made he made Wedding Singer, and then he just made a bunch more movies with Drew Barrymore, and we don't have to think about them. and that's I think, the one thing Leo doesn't have. Like, Leo has absolute choice. He can work with whoever he wants, but I feel like he wants people to be like, you're really good at acting.
Yeah.
It's like he's waiting. There's like something that's like someone's going to go, you're really good at acting. And then that will be enough.
I think he's got real I think Sandler's the next Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Because I think Bill Murray has that similar legacy where he's just like, you know, he just does things for fun. I mean, like, say what you want about him. He's done a few things lately that isn't great.
Yeah.
But there was a real time period where everyone had that same mentality where he's like, we know he's gone dodgy shit. He just picks and chooses what he wants to do now. And he has that legacy of, similar. Sorry, my tummy's rumbling. Is that picking up on the microphone?
We'll find out.
No, I guess we'll find out.
That'd be fun. Just clocking it there.
I doubt it.
Tom, if you could pick up on that, can you get, like, just go into it real
bring
hard
it up,
right
Tom.
Now?
Bring it up. That's why I was distracted. I was trying to talk about Bill Murray and it's going, under the.
I thought of another one that I think is, I might be wrong. And they might just be very good at faking it. But I reckon Diane Keaton's really happy.
Oh, yeah.
I think Diane Keaton's just a very happy. I don't think Diane Keaton works when they don't want to. I think they choose what they want to do. I think they seem really, really happy. Their Instagram is so funny.
Do you know who else is well? Mm. Like, there's actually a few. That sent me on a bit of a path. I think Meryl Streep's got a bit of that. And I think But I genuinely think, I might be wrong, and I think this will be controversial, but I genuinely think Kate Blanchett's got a bit of that.
I think, well.
Oh, see, this is.
Meg, have you worked with Kate?
No, I have not worked with Kate.
But she's close.
Yeah. There was that moment there where Maggie went, and then stopped speaking because you never know.
No, I was going to say, I with Kate's career, I'm a bit over the acting.
Oh, yeah, no, totally.
And I would love to see her, and I think she did recently. Have you guys watched Documentary Now?
No, I've got to watch it.
It has to be, if you're listening, it's one of my, it sings to me because it's my type of humour. It has to be one of my favourite TV series. It's so good. And if you're a film buff and a documentary nerd, you have to watch it. Because what they do is they kind of, it's Fred Armiston and Bill Hader.
Oh, wow.
And they.
I don't even know you. I've never heard of this show.
Well, they take the thematics of famous documentaries and make their own version of that documentary. So every episode is different. So that it kicks off with this brilliant Grey Gardens parody. It's so good. And they really commit.
I really want to watch it. Yeah.
And then there's this one, this really good one they did with Kate Blanchett in it. And it took me a while to realise she was the lead. And it was just about, I couldn't, someone out there probably knows, but it was obviously based off a famous 80s or 90s English documentary, just about a hairdresser in a coastal town in England.
Oh, wow.
And she plays the apprentice hairdresser. And she's really funny. She's so funny and so good. And you can tell she's having so much fun in similar to what we're talking about prior. She's having a great time. And I'm like, yes. And she had fake teeth in and I forget how chameleon-like she can be.
Yeah, she really is. I forget that as well with her.
And
yeah.
It took me a real couple of beats to realise, oh, father, that's Kate Blanchett and she's the lead in this. But if you've got time, there's three series. It's so, so good. There's one
that, check it out.
Where they have Alexander Sarsgaard. He's pretending to be, I think, Icelandic or Norwegian, Werner Herzog-style film director, and they're trying to shoot a 90s sitcom in the middle of middle of Greenland, using Greenland nomadic actors and stuff like that. And it's a two-episode one. But, it's on Prime if you want to watch it.
I'm going to watch this. That sounds amazing.
Yeah,
sounds
incredible.
There's so many to talk about. I think there's six or seven in each season, and each one's an hour long. They have one where it's this Swedish little town they pretended they had this fake festival called the Al Capone Festival, where all these villagers would dress up as Al Capone and special ed. Just nothing to do with the town, nothing to do with the country. It's just, and they got all obviously the local people and shut down the town to record a lot of it. But really, really high budget. I think I'm pretty sure Lorne Michaels is behind it.
Lorne Michaels is behind everything.
Yeah,
it has to be one of my favourite TV shows.
I'm going to watch that.
It keeps getting better.
Heard amazing things about it, yeah.
Each one's different as well, so it's like a mini film. And if you know documentaries a lot, they do a fake Thin Blue Line, that stuff. It's very, very clever. Fuck yeah.
There's a funny thing that's happened with mockumentaries, where mockumentaries have become... I was thinking about this. So I really should watch this because I think about mockumentaries a lot, about how it's become a genre. And you watch early mockumentaries, you watch Best in Show, or you watch the Spinal Tap, and it's those movies are not the genre of mockumentary. They're a pastiche using the form of documentary. They're literally trying to be as realistically documentary as possible, and then they're using that as a framework for improv.
Yeah.
And it's it's so funny because it's so interesting that mockumentary, there is no documentary that looks or feels like Modern Family. Do you know what I mean? Is nothing.
Nothing,
It's evolved. It's
it's not passé anymore. It's it's an actual thing that's glorious, and I think it should be celebrated, the mockumentary. It's my favorite.
But also, I want to make one so bad.
Yeah, but I think as well, I'd love to get back, what they're doing with Documentary Now, it's get back to taking the full, they've done it a few times. It's happened a few times, but actually looking at what documentaries are doing now.
Yeah, and that's what the point of difference with this show. I completely agree. Yeah, it's a mockumentary, but it's also paying homage to the craft in itself, and not just
It's mockumentary in the old sense of the word.
A workplace mockumentary was we got so many of them, didn't we? The workplace through the noughties with every version of The Office and Parks and Rec,
yeah.
Modern Family, and that's kind of that one where it's like there's a crew in the house, but we really don't know why.
Like the original, like it happens a bit in The Office, but there's like a point where it's like how. Like in the original Office, they're aware of the crew, and there's a point where this show will come out, and it does. It comes out in The Office, like particularly the British one. The first two seasons, the last special is set after the show has come out, and they're all a bit famous. And
it's I like that. So it's like it's reflective. At the same time.
Yeah, and like there's an awareness when they do a talking head or when that there's a camera there. Mm. Whereas like with Modern Family, they like share the deepest secrets. Like, such an interesting notion that like
And it's it's the Greek chorus basically. So it's like it's taking that Greek chorus, not like kind of structure. That's what a mockumentary is it's giving the opportunity of breaking that fourth wall to explain what's happening or a punchline.
Yeah.
Do you know what would be phenomenal? This is a weird thing, and then we can talk about the movie. What would be amazing is like a thing, like a sketch or a short or whatever, where it's like it's the Modern Family style of mockumentary, but you actually start to untangle like what is there a film crew there, or are these people going into separate rooms and just like talking to themselves.
Yeah, there's nothing
like,
there on the other wall. I love
like,
that. Yeah.
What is this for? Like someone going, when are you going to release this?
Yeah, why have you
been like 12 seasons?
12 years. We're not famous. Nothing's changed in the family. Why are you here? We're just a family. Like,
are you ever going to release this show? Yeah.
There was a point in the American Office where I think they jumped the shark towards the end. I think it was after Carell left.
Yeah,
and I think Pam had a weird moment with one of the boom operators.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think they were testing that, and I think it could work, but it was too late because they just like the structure was so hard in your mind as a viewer. Season 7 or whatever it was, to break that wall, to break that thought. I don't think it worked then. But if they'd done it at the start, if the whole thing was about that camera crew, do you know what I mean?
Well, it's funny if the mockumentary was about the camera crew filming one of those.
Yeah. So
it gets really
confusing.
A double auction mockumentary.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like
about
it's like,
why they're there in that person's house. Like,
yeah, and like there's a talking head and then a shot of them shooting the talking head and then a talking head. So basically we get the actors and we do the talking heads all in one day.
But, you know, there's like I think that's what I'm currently working on a couple of projects because I think there's not a lot of stuff that is retroscripted in Australia these days, and that's the term you use that they use for like Curb and things like that, where you don't get a script, you get beats, and you bring the actors in with the ability to improv between each other, and that you get so much comedy gold and joy, and you can see there's a bit of that in The Office, and you know. But you mentioned Best in Show before.
Oh my god!
The Christopher Guest films are a perfect example.
And they're
of
shot; those films are shot like documentaries.
Yeah.
Like if they discover something in a talking head, it folds into the story, and it's like you that sense of discovery, and that sense of you shoot a lot and you just make the good film out of all the stuff you've shot.
Yeah.
You should shoot a You should like. I think you should shoot a mockumentary like a documentary.
Yeah, no.
Oh, absolutely. That's what makes it funny. For me, anyway. But anyway, do you think Best in Show, last question, and then we really do have to talk about the film. Do you think Best in Show is a 10 out of 10?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's a 10 out of 10.
And I know you and I have disagreed on what 10 out of 10 means. I think it's a 10 out of 10 in every definition.
Yes. Same. Yeah.
Like it's a perfect film.
It's a perfect film. Yeah, absolutely.
It's
I think
so
I watch
funny.
It once a year.
It's
so funny.
Yeah.
I really loved this is a little off topic, but I really love Dark City. It's a movie I'm going to screen it at the Lido soon, but it's a movie I really love and it's really underrated. And it's very similar to The Matrix. It's sort of like set in a weird anyway. And someone DM'd me and they were like, "Which is better, Dark City or The Matrix?" And I was just like, I love Dark City. I think it's so underrated. But The Matrix is a nearly perfect film. I know you disagree, but I was like, The Matrix is
I've
a nearly perfect film.
I've never seen The Matrix.
It's fine, whatever. We don't need to talk about whether it's. But this is what I mean by 10 out of 10. Like sometimes I love a movie that's in my opinion, a 6 or 7 out of 10 because it shoots for something.
Yeah.
But like The Matrix, and like I think Best in Show. Best in Show is like perfect. Like I wouldn't cut a single scene. I wouldn't add a single scene. Mm. It's like a perfect film.
Perfectly cast. Every joke is good.
And like, then what's amazing is I think Waiting for Guffman is also perfect.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. the combination of it is just
phenomenal.
And it was so groundbreaking. I'm so jealous they thought of that first.
Same.
I'm like, same. Fuck you.
Yeah, because Spinal Tap.
Like, so Spinal Tap and stuff. And now everything's Waiting for Government or it doesn't have that.
Yeah, when are we going to make an idea that in 10 years' time they're like, oh, it's kind of like that idea that we're...
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, but this is almost what I mean is it's like that's the thing about people are now doing things like Waiting for Government and like Best in Show, but that's not what documentaries are like anymore.
No.
And that's where I think it's like have to update the parody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to go, what is a document? The next... Guffman should look more like Cheer or more like...
100% or more like Don't Fuck With Cats or more like that Fire Festival documentary.
But then that also gets to the point that documentary is not a genre and I'm a bit sick of the fact that that's one genre of documentary and that's like the only kind of documentary that's getting made now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm a bit over that.
Do you know what I'm struggling with?
And then we should talk about the movie. Sorry, go.
Every time you watch a documentary on like a streaming service or something like that, they do a recap of the documentary before it starts. And that seemed to be a new thing. So when you watch it, it's a recap of everything's about that happens in this documentary, and then the initial slate will start. So
it's like a trailer before the film.
Yeah, and I don't want to know the twists and things like that. Mm. And it's obviously, I think it's something the network's gone. We've got to grab people in the first 30 seconds. But these days, no matter what it is, I'll skirt to the titles.
That's smart.
And it makes the viewing so much more interesting. Because you have no idea what's coming, what it's doing these days.
After this ad break, we're going to each list our favourite documentary and then we'll talk about the movie. Yeah, because it's the teaser. Remember how we were doing teasers before the ad breaks?
Remember that whole thing we've got for the last? Of course, yeah. I was like, what do you mean? We can just do it now.
Why don't we do it before that? Remember how for the last, 4 months we've been teasing before the...
Yeah, sorry about that. All right. Oh, I can't wait to reveal
our favourite. I actually have no idea.
What are the ads?
Yeah,
I don't know. Whatever.
Whatever.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, here's the
ad. Welcome back. There probably wasn't an ad. I don't even know what my favourite documentary is.
I have no idea. That's really hard. I will say I really loved the Fire Festival documentary.
It's a one? Are we talking Netflix or the other one? I think there was an HBO one.
There was two.
Oh, the Netflix one.
That's a great
one. Only because it was just like I knew nothing about. I don't know why that completely went over my head. I guess because I'm in Australia. I guess it wasn't really much of a thing here. But I didn't know anything about
so
it.
Many
and
layers.
I was watching. It was just so many layers. I was like, what? This is fucking cooked. I really enjoyed that documentary.
And, I think a film and TV is going through this wonderful phase of Eat the Rich.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect documentary for that.
100%.
The laughs that were ricocheting around our house while watching that,
Also, just quickly, Stan's Love Fraud, which was a mini-series, doco series.
Yeah, right.
It was so entertaining.
Okay, I'll watch that.
Oh, you must. So entertaining about a guy on dating apps that just like steals everyone's money, but fucking really interesting.
I would say mine's Queen of Versailles. Have you guys seen
it? Oh, no. I love that one.
Another Eat
That's
the
a
rich.
Good answer, Maggie.
Zach, no. It's brilliant.
You've got
oh,
you
watch
would
it.
Love.
Yeah,
so you would simply would. Love.
I don't think I've even heard of it.
So they basically start filming, and I won't give away too much.
I love it.
They start filming these people building the biggest home in America.
The
recession hits.
It's been on. I've seen half of it.
You've got to sit down.
And they have all their money from timeshare.
So the recession, they're billionaires and they just lose everything.
Oh,
they've managed to capture it in this perfect moment of sheer incredible. Like, she's basically had like six kids because she has could afford a nanny for each child.
Wow.
And they're get to the stage rattling around this huge house with no staff. They just pretty much lose everything while they're filming it. So it was all supposed to be about this house. And it's.
There's nothing better than a documentary that becomes something else. Like, it's like, it's so rare now.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Tickled?
Yeah, Tickled's great.
Tickled made me feel weird.
Yeah, really weird. But that's that. It started as a different kind of doco. And then as it got created, it was this is something else.
There's a lot of fake ones of them now on Netflix where they're like, you can feel that they're holding off information that they knew from the start.
Yeah.
Mm. When it's a sense that the directors are really discovering it. Mm. Like, what was that one with the Jinx, was that?
Yeah.
Really.
Jinx and Staircase are the perfect Staircase reveal documentaries. Like, just like
Jinx was great.
Jinx, that bit at the end was just.
Yeah. Staircase. I'm going to say my favorite is one called it's called Collective. And it was about a nightclub fire in I should know the country, but like in like Eastern Europe. There was this nightclub fire and the documentary crew followed the investigative journalists figuring out what happened, and then they follow that, and it's this sort of same thing that you're describing where they follow that, and then it becomes about corruption in the health system, and then like I'm kind of giving it away, but halfway through they just shift who the point of focus is on and they move to a politician that's like, and it's just this like you genuinely feel them just like
discovering stuff.
They were like, this is interesting, and they just film for months.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Collective.
Collective, okay.
It's just amazing. Real fly on the wall. There's no talking heads. I'm pretty sure there's no talking heads. And like the big thing is they just change main characters halfway through because that's where the story goes.
Great.
It's awesome. Really cool.
Can I just drop one more in?
Yeah, please.
100%.
Have you guys seen the recent one about the murder that happened in the submarine?
Oh, I know about that murder, but there's a
brilliant one. I think it's on Netflix.
I can't remember
the name of it. I'll look it up before we finish. And it's basically similar. It was a documentary started by someone working with the person who committed this murder. So they'd been filming. They had all the footage, all the filming. They were around them. They were part of his engineer team making a documentary on the submarine they were building. And so they were still having to work around this guy while he was a murder suspect. So, and he was still giving interviews and stuff like this.
Oh, my God, amazing.
It's like you just hearts. And there's a real Jinx moment at the end as well. Not Jinx. Held back. It was it was linear. It was in the timeline, the reveal.
Wow.
But I think she's...
No, that's... Yeah, that's... I love that.
Yeah,
stuff.
I think she was... From memory, she might have been an Australian woman, I think. Yeah.
That's such a fucked up story.
Yeah.
The way it's done is scary because you know he did it. Like, that's not giving away anything. So it's really talking about her relationship with her boss and making a documentary about her boss.
Mm.
And then that happened along the way and getting an insight into what was happening behind the scenes, similar to The Staircase.
Yeah.
I'll look up the name of it before we leave. but that's a really good one as well.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Now let's talk about Nancy.
Yeah, all right.
I love movies. I could talk about movies.
Yeah, same. I love doc. I go on little, like every year I have a little like doco month and that's just like I only watch documentaries and I feel like it's coming again.
My partner is like all doco.
Yeah.
To the point that I'm always saying no to docos and then every time I watch a doc, like, but I love docos. Yeah. I need to watch more docos.
I think docos went through a real heavy pedo stage where like you'd be watching it and then the reveal at the end was they're a pedo and I got turned off docos for a while.
That's very true. Yeah, that's such a gross twist.
I know, and it's not even it's interesting, but it's not.
It's when that's when I get tired of the making a murderer style or the serial style documentary where it's constructed, where it's like this isn't that interesting of a story. It's sad.
Yeah,
it's sad and it's cruel and it's upsetting, and then you've made twists and turns.
Yeah.
Because every story can have twists and turns if you reveal it a certain way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And that's when I think maybe because we're in this industry and we know how to edit things a little bit, if you see it and you know that they're doing it on purpose, it can just feel really gross to do it, particularly when it's like
100%
that stuff.
Yeah, when those themes are... Yeah. On that note,
Nancy! All right, let's chat Nancy. Nancy is a 2018 drama slash mystery directed by Christina Cho, starring Andrea Riseborough and J. Smith Cameron with John Leguizamo and a and Steve Buscemi billing.
Oh, yeah, that's a hard who's getting the and the with.
Yeah, so John got the with and Steve Buscemi got the and.
Yeah, it's Buscemi, you can't compete with Buscemi.
What's the difference? Is it
someone? Oh, if you get a and somebody.
That's the better one.
That's.
I think
it means that you're the prolific figure in this film. Like you're the actor in this film that's going to sell the film.
It's
really.
the thing that I've read online. It's that Samuel L. Jackson spot.
Mm.
You know, I think most actors are gunning for top. They're gunning for the first name.
Yeah.
And then based on that, I think in that world, that means that most actors are going for second or third even.
Yeah.
And we always talk about John Leguizamo. This is a podcast dedicated to the actor that gets third or fourth billing.
Yeah.
But we've been seeing in his career in the last few years, he's now becoming an and actor.
I love that.
So you know
that.
The menu?
Yeah.
And John Leguizamo.
Oh, I love that.
And we were like literally we talked about that for half the podcast.
How exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Mm. The movie tells the story of Nancy, an imaginative, sad and mysterious woman who has made a habit of creating elaborate lies about her life both online and with the very few people in her life she interacts with. Less than a week after her mother's death, she sees the mother from Harriet the Spy and the guy from a bunch of Adam Sandler movies.
She's Harriet the Spy?
The mum.
She's Succession as well. Anyway, keep going.
Less than a week after her mother's death, she sees the mother from Harriet the Spy and the guy from a bunch of Adam Sandler movies doing a television interview about their daughter who went missing 30 years ago. Nancy takes it upon herself to tell this couple she believes she is their missing daughter. Super disturbing shit. John plays Jeb, a reader of Nancy's blog where she writes about her fake pregnancy. He's in it for 2 scenes and 3 minutes and never has a role in a small film yelled, doing a mate a favour by taking this on more than this one. That's where I stand with that. He was great. He was phenomenal, but I bet you money, a producer or a director who was mates with John Leguizamo was like, can you do this for us?
One of the producers was Barbara Broccoli, who does all of the...
That's weird.
Yeah.
Who does
all of the Bond films.
Do you reckon it's a tax break?
Hmm.
No, I think she just... I think she likes to do other stuff.
She likes the name.
Between the Bonds. Mm. Yeah. Well, she likes to like...
we'll state now Christina Cho, who directed this film, hasn't done a hell of a lot. She did a couple of episodes of Handmaid's Tale. And she also worked on Waco, which was a series that John Leguizamo was in.
Before or after?
After, I think.
It's always intriguing when you see repeating.
So she's giving him a call to say which one can you be part of.
Yeah.
He gets a lot of repeat. That's where I go, you know, because when you dedicate.
Wait, same year.
We'll never know.
Yeah.
That's going to take like two or three more hyperlinks in the IMDb. I can't be bothered.
Yeah. Oh, look, is there a way we do this? Is there a
chat.
It's chats for about everything and then chats about the movie.
Yeah, to be honest, I watched it in waiting for a flight last night while hoeing into some Red Rooster chips.
On your phone or your lap?
On my phone.
Oh, great.
And I had to break because I had to fly. And then I got in and I watched the ending. I thought John was great.
Not always.
He was definitely.
That should be, you're talking about merch. It should be, I thought John was great.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I thought he was.
He was write that down.
That's like John a quote. That's the quote of this podcast. John was great.
No, I haven't. I've got a definite opinion about this film.
I could not move past the wig.
Yeah, no, the wig was tough.
What was that about?
That was a shocking wig. It was a really odd choice.
Bizarre. It was like a second character.
Yeah.
It was her hair.
The character Nancy is like, it's not meant to be a wig. We're meant to believe it's her hair, but it's the most shocking synthetic black, like
huge as well.
Huge, really thick. There was no part.
Think Noel Fielding, Mighty Boosh, but double it. Like that's
that's actually very much the vibe.
You know what made me think? This is like a silly, like I was thinking as I was watching it, I was like, if I had a haircut like that on a character, if I was a director and I had a haircut like that on a character and hair and makeup budget wasn't that big, so we kind of had to have the fringe to cover the thing. I'll go, can we get in a big, can we like pay a lot of money for hair and makeup for one day to have one shot where the fringe is up off the
ponytail?
Just to show it once early in the film.
So it's not just a wig.
Where you can see the hair coming out of the forehead. If you just show that once, I feel like then you'd believe the wig. Like, that's all I needed. Like, yeah, that's such a weird thing to say.
No, that's so true.
I was like, I just need to see a hair going into a forehead.
Mm. I could not look past it. And so I really found it
tough.
And I think the actress, what's her name?
Andrea.
I think she's a great actress. And I think, again, like we were talking about Kate Blanchett, a total chameleon.
Mm. And she really is.
And then you just throw this wig on top of it. Mm. And you're like, if you just teased out her hair slightly and put like a, or like, I don't know, put a, like a another wig on that's just like, maybe she's got auburn hair.
It made me
She just
wonder,
needed to look slightly different to that picture, which was obviously her that they've put slightly through Photoshop. Mm.
Yeah.
So in context, when she first starts to think, potentially I'm this kid that this family's lost as an adult, they've done a mock up of what this kid could look like.
Yeah. Yes.
And they print it out. She prints it out and holds it up to her face. And it's actually on the poster when you look it up.
Yeah.
And you can tell that production's gotten a real photo of her and just kind of stretched her out a little bit. The face blur tool or something like that. And all they needed to do was to do hair slightly different to it. It didn't need to be what it was.
I wonder if it was like because she was shooting Oblivion at the time, or you know what I mean? I was wondering if there was like a contractual thing or like a, you know.
But get a better wig.
But I mean, this is the thing. Like, isn't it interesting that like a film you can do all this work years and years and years and it all kind of comes undone because the wig wasn't quite right.
It was just bizarre.
I think my opinion of this film.
Yeah.
It held my interest. I'm not gonna, like, this isn't me being like, I'm going to try and, like, because a lot of people are on to me. They're like, you clearly didn't like that one, Mish.
Did I say that to you?
Yeah.
Do you get DMs saying you
sometimes
clearly
I'm
didn't
just
like, it?
Like, they get like, we.
Yeah, you're very transparent.
But no, it's not that I dislike this film. This movie was fine. I'll never watch it again. Like, I know I won't watch it again. It was fine. It was just another one of those, like, we've watched a couple of them in John Leguizamo's filmography where it's just down.
Yeah, there's
it's
no
very
light
depressing
yeah,
film.
Yeah,
I struggle to call it a mystery because there were no twists or turns.
No,
yeah, it
was not a psychological thriller.
No. Well, it was. I think it's a drama.
Yeah,
100%. But it's described on everything else as a mystery.
Oh, I think that's on the marketing team for getting that.
Yeah, they probably had the same conversation we're having right now. Like, what do we do to get around the wig? Let's call it a mystery. I also think, like, when watching it, like, talking story structure. I thought it was a real wasted opportunity. So this is the way I thought it potentially could have gone better in my head. So she'd done all these like con stuff at the start. So she's conning people online. And then it was like that bit of the story ended. And then like the other bit started where she started being around meeting this couple and stuff. Like it was like a strict split in time of the film. Mm. There wasn't a three-part act. It was like two parts.
Mm.
I thought John was going to come back.
I wanted him coming back so bad.
I thought she was going to go in and form this relationship from these people. He's going to come in and for somehow and be like, no, she's a liar. And they're like, what are you talking about? And he's got proof that she lied to him. But then it's going to find out she actually was their daughter. That's how I would have written it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's interesting.
Maggie, that's my cool. Nancy theory.
No, there was a part of me that was like, could they have? Because for me, it was really unambiguous that she was not their daughter.
Mm.
Like there was no ambiguity there. I thought.
Mm.
Like I was there for you guys.
Oh no, that was not their daughter. That
like
was...
we demonstrated she lied. She had like they and that and I don't think they wanted us to think that she might be. I might be wrong, but I felt like it was a drama about. Here's my thing, right? Because I usually struggle with these movies. This is like I always say. This is the thing I always say is like, oh, I wish I'd had the right amount of time. I wish I'd sat down and watched it properly. Like your thing about watching it on the phone.
Mm.
We just watched a film recently called Meadowland, which is like a real downer. and I like half watched it, and it's like, and I never feel like I can give it a full, like, a film like this, I never feel like I can give it a full thing because I only half watched it.
Yeah.
This
but
is,
also middling dramas aren't your favourite thing.
It's a different genre.
Different era, yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking, when I talk about middling dramas, I mean because they're not like, whoa, you know, like, it's like, oh, duh. You know, yeah. I'm talking about more like, oh, middle class and isn't that interesting and
early
the end.
90s dramas, yeah.
Yeah, like.
Yeah.
I don't mind a drama. If I'm watching a drama, I want it to go to dark, dark places like this, right? Mm-hmm. This is the first time in a long time with a film like this where I sat and I watched it. I had the time and I sat and I properly watched it. And I think I liked it a lot more than or I engaged with it a lot more. It really, really got me at the end.
Yeah.
So I had a thing where I was like, because I agree, I think what you're saying, Maggie, I think they could have possibly just lost the first half hour.
Mm.
Like the film could have just started at the house, like it could have literally just started with her calling the parents and saying, I think I might be your daughter, and then just going to their house. And yeah. That's the whole film Punch. Is about this.
And then we progressively find out she's a liar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think flick it around.
John
that's
comes
a great
in
point.
At some point. Yeah. Yeah.
But even, like, I love John, but, like, just completely cut that character, completely cut everything. You just start at the, hi, I think I might be your daughter.
That's, and then, that would have been phenomenal, Zach.
Like literally the same film, but you start there.
Do you
there.
Reckon if we got on the tools, we could re-edit that film?
I often think about re-editing films all the time.
Yeah.
Just, you fucking dork.
No, I think it'd be so much fun.
Surely there's someone on the dark web that's doing that.
I think if anyone knows anyone, Maggie, it's you, our Andy, who could figure that out. I would like to say that the main character for me was the mum.
Yes.
I thought her journey and her arc was really interesting. I thought she was great. I don't know much about it. I literally saw her and was like, I know she's in Succession.
No, no,
I know
no,
she's
no,
in
no,
Succession.
No, 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 no. And this is not me being like, I'm like telling you, if you love her, you gotta watch Succession.
She's one of the standouts.
I've not watched Succession.
She was
yet.
In Succession. Literally, she was meant to just be one of the, like, in season one, she's just like one of the anonymous board members, and just because she's so good, she just becomes a main character.
Oh, I'm so happy for her because
she's a sleeper
for
star.
Me, because I've not seen Succession. For me, I saw her and I was like, that's Harriet the Spy's mum.
I love that that was.
That's fine. And but that's even, okay.
But I had the same thing with her where I was like, oh, I know her. I saw her in Succession. She doesn't go to this place.
I thought that. What made this movie different from a lot of the other middling drama, like when I say middling dramas, this is obviously very dark, but from a lot of those other real dark dramas that we've watched was her character. I thought that that was a really interesting study on what a woman who has lost her child 30 years ago and then has this person, like, and then
and
there's
funny.
The whole question of, do you think she ever truly believed that that was her daughter?
Yeah. Mm.
And it was just like, I loved that. There was just so many, and you never know really, but that at the end when she like hugs her and she's like, I love you. Like, it was just like, oh my God.
And
like,
why do you
so
think she left?
Done.
Like, why do you think
so
Nancy
because
left?
When and Nancy leaves, because it was a con. I think what I really loved about this film is initially I was sort of going, I think as well because of that first half hour, I was really trying. I wanted there to be more mystery and more plot and more dirt. And I was like kind of wanting that out of it. And then I just sort of sat into it. And then I think once the mum I wouldn't call it a twist. And I'm reticent to give it away, but we kind of have. But like when it's revealed that she's not their daughter.
We can say that. We've spoiled warning. Don't
you
remember
spoiled.
My really...
I know, but sometimes I feel bad doing it with such a small film. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because I kind of go give it a go, you know?
Yeah.
But when it's revealed that she's not the daughter, the choices that the mum makes is really unexpected.
Mm.
But really, I thought, you know, but even then, if I were to tell you what the twist is, I think I've already given it away. Like, it's not like she immediately... But the way it's played is so subtle, and then that scene, like the whole movie she's like, you were this, you were this. And then when she talks about her daughter in the third person again, she's like, I used to take Brooke here.
To it's the
like,
water, yeah.
Yeah, and so yeah, it's like, just by doing this subtle thing, it's like, I know you're not. And then in the car, so she just by changing the pronouns or by going from first person to third person, it's revealed that she knows.
Mm.
And then there's a moment when they're sitting in the car driving back to the house where she touches her hand, she holds her hand. Mm. And I cried. I don't cry often in movies, but I cried. I was just like, that is so sad. And it's this moment of like, I think it's like, I feel like so many filmmakers would try and make it twisty and try and make it like
the daughter comes back or like,
they would go, how can we make this work? Like, how can we make the DNA test go away? Or how can we, and instead of that, they were just like, this is never going to work. This is never, they're never going to be able to pretend that she's her daughter, but this woman is going to take the next few hours where she can hold on to this and just have a daughter.
Yeah, it was incredible.
It was like, for me, all the flaws of the movie, which there were many, were worth it for that, like, 10 minutes of film.
Zach,
I loved it.
We don't always agree, but I think that you just articulated my feelings about this film exactly. Maggie?
But Maggie, if I had watched it the way I usually watch these films on a phone in two parts on a plane, I'm going to give you the. I would not have appreciated that. Like
what both of you said. I think you've completely, you've done it from a different perspective, and yeah, I can exactly see what you're saying.
We've also been on a journey of watching a lot of movies, like
so many.
But yeah, I had to rejig my brain because like I said, I'm usually a comedy or a documentary gal. So sinking
and knowing that, I'm so glad we gave you Nancy.
No, it was good. It was good. It was good for me to watch something different like that. I think all the actors did a great job. Maybe I'm just a maybe I'm a bit superficial. The wig really put me.
Oh no, the wig threw me for it, and that's also where I go. Like, what this is for me is like, it's sad to hear Christina Cho hasn't done much else because I'm like, oh, I would love to see her with a bit more money.
A builder film
to develop. Yeah. It's like a great first film.
Yeah,
I want to see her second and third film. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I want to see what she does next because there were like just scenes in the dialogue and just.
I think it said it made $90,000 at the box office.
Whoa. Andrea Riseborough's had
run. Good for me. I'd take that. I don't know why you guys are poo-pooing that. I wouldn't mind working on something that made me $90,000.
I think we figured out who the Hamish and Andy are in this team now.
$90,000. You're not wrong. I love that. That we're in a world where like, $90,000. Oh, that's heaps. That is actually heaps of money.
That's heaps of cash.
That's heaps of money.
It's like everything Charlie Chaplin ever earned when he was alive.
Yeah.
Do we have any final thoughts about Nancy?
Nancy.
I don't really. I think I've said it. Watch it if this is the kind of thing you like, watch it for sure. I think it's a really that relationship study between Nancy and Harriet the Spy's mom.
Nancy.
I think is very, very interesting and totally worth a watch. I can't hear the name Nancy without thinking about a character from the Babysitter's Club.
I also, I'm flagging that as well, which is just a really bizarre, like it was like Jesse. I feel like that's a name from that generation. I don't know. I see exactly what you're saying about how it's supposed to be subtle. But
no, I also think everything, like I think there's like the my final thought would be, you know, like how there's a lot of unrelentingly depressing films in the independent like that we've discovered. It's like, and these are the movies you don't tend to see unless you pick one actor who had happened to do it one weekend and it was at Sundance and then no one ever saw it. And it's been really great to see it because you realize how many movies don't quite get over the line because of a wig or because it needed to be a little bit funnier or it was a little bit too. And this movie, I think, where it was different, I think, from some of the other really depressing movies is it had like this weird kind of optimism and there was a kind of beauty in it, and the music was really soft and beautiful. I think structurally it had huge problems. I think the wig was distracting. Mm. But I just thought there was something really special inside it all. And particularly, it's actually really fitting, I think, because Succession, everyone in the last couple of years is like obsessed with, I'm looking her up, I've forgotten her name, J. Smith Cameron.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
They're obsessed with her at the moment. I don't know anything she's been in other than Succession.
Harriet the Spy now.
Well, now I know Harriet the Spy.
Mm.
But she is like, you really want to talk about an actor that like...
Similar to John, similar trajectory, a character actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even less opportunity than John, really.
Yeah, female character actor.
But you don't.
But with a vagina.
If someone, honestly, it's interesting that whole thing is like if someone said to you, name five character actors on a hand, my brain would go male.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's so nice to, for some reason. And so nice to have someone coming through the ranks who can play characters.
Like I would definitely want to watch more of what Jay does.
Yeah, me too. I think she's brilliant. I think she's a standout star, sleeper star, and I really liked John in it as well.
And I love Punch. She's having her, because we're Australian, I feel like she's having her, I remembered her name and then I forgot it. I do this all the time. And I've also forgotten the name of the movie, Animal Kingdom.
Jackie Weaver.
Like, yeah. We as Australians are aware of Jackie Weaver.
Mm. Yeah.
But, like, Jackie Weaver had such a special thing for her to be that in Australia and then suddenly have all these opportunities. 100%. I love that, like, J. Cameron Smith is having her Jackie Weaver moment.
Yeah, like, and similar acting styles as well. Like, yeah. Similar vibe.
They would be up against, like, they would be... well, I know that Jackie Weaver is available from Animal Kingdom and, J. Cameron Smith, she's currently on hold for something bigger, but she might be available.
Yeah, they've got both pictures up on the wall.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
I'll jump into my Leguistamos if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
Leguistamos is out of 5-star rating we give the film for how Leguizamo-y it is. So don't think about what you think of the just film him. Out of 5. Just how if you take Romeo and Juliet, that's a 5 Leguistamo film.
Yeah.
Because of there's so much Leguizamo-iness in it.
And you're not rating the movie. Mm. You're not rating his performance.
Okay. No. It's just like how the vibe of how
yes.
So we talk about this all the time. We bring it up a lot. But Speed, which is a movie he's not in, has a 2 Leguistamo rating.
Because it's the vibe. Yeah.
Because it
Maggie
just...
gets it.
You get it.
I totally get it. It's a discourse.
This gets a 1.5 Leguistamo rating from me. It's not a very high Leguistamo rating, only because I actually don't think he was that necessary in the film. I think he was in it so little. He was fantastic. I'm not talking about his
ability. He was actually really good. And I like his beautiful. Slick back hair.
Yeah, it was a different long.
He's doing the
long.
I think it was his, because he's done the long curly to slick it back, I thought was a nice
interesting
choice.
Yeah. But in terms of how Leguizamo-y this film feels, like it didn't have a particular amount of like, whew. But I will say he does love a fucking good scene in a diner. The scene in the diner between he's just so phenomenal. But still, just 1.5 for Nancy.
I love how much this is a companion piece to Meadowland. We just watched a movie, right? No joke. Where about a couple whose child goes missing, where John Leguizamo plays a character in 2 scenes who comes and visits in a diner who has had a similar experience, who has also lost a child.
We didn't plan this.
Literally, like, but it's so funny because it's structurally different and it's 20 years apart.
Funny.
And I think it clarified some of my issues with Meadowland more, what I liked about this movie by being 20 years later and stuff. I do have one last final thought before my Leguistamo, is I've always wanted to make a movie not biographically, but like a fictional take on Belle Gibson. Because she's such a fascinating figure.
Oh my god! Yes.
And I think so much
that'd make a great doco.
I think it'd make a great doco, and particularly for an international audience. But I just, for me, it's a fiction because I just want to get into her head.
It's a new generation of con as well. Like it's a young woman. Like it's a young woman who clearly is sociopathic and who is set up. Who just obviously, it's bizarre. We haven't seen a fiction like we've seen like Nancy, who is, you know, Nancy's wrong side touching of the
tracks. On it, yeah. You know, touching on that, like that desire to lie and why you would do it. But it really sparked the flame in me.
Oh, 100%.
No, I'd love story. To see
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you play Belle?
But I think I'm in Leguistamo's. I'm going to give it one Leguistamo. For all the reasons you listed, Mish, but more than that, because my want for the film was to cut everything he was in.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a disservice to Leguizamo. Mm. He's such a great actor. If I finish a film and I want to cut him, well, why'd you waste his bloody week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also, but I do want to give it a J. Cameron Smith score.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
It's 5 J. Cameron stars.
Yeah, 100%. This is a 5 J.
She's so good in this fucking film.
She's so fucking good.
Yeah. Watch this film for her, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of give a – don't stop with Succession.
Just start the movie, make yourself a cup of tea over the first half hour, and then sit in and have a watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Maggie, what's your Leguistamo rating?
I'm going to go with 1 as well because it's not his – I thought he did a brilliant job and he was my favourite part. But it's not it was – but in saying that, I haven't explored the variety of back catalogue of his films.
I can't fucking tell you.
So I'm kind of like going off the same thing where I've seen him more in, you know, obviously Romeo and Juliet, action films, you know, and where he's really spicy. Like he's like, he's quite a fiery character usually. Mm. And this was quite a subtle character.
Yeah.
But I don't want to paint that paintbrush over him. I really liked seeing him being a subtle character. I liked him seeing
We can give
him
you 5 to 10 recommendations.
Okay.
You like tell me any more. Color of Leguizamo
I
you
would
want.
Like to see it. I feel like my Leguistaro rating is skewed because I don't have as much history on what it could possibly be. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm low as well because traditionally from my knowledge of his back catalogue,
it is not
on par.
Well, you happen to have hit the nail on the head, I reckon, because it's very similar to our scores.
Yeah.
Maggie, thank you so much for joining us today on Leguizamarama. Where can people find you?
You can find me on It's Okay, It's Maggie Luke on Instagram and some other things coming out soon, which will be
Maggie's
really
Maggie's really good. Yeah. Follow Maggie.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see.
Mish is also good.
You too, Zach. You're pretty good to yourself.
Yeah, you guys are good.
Thanks Maggie.
Oh, that was so kind of you, Maggie. Tom, can you take us away with an excerpt of that trailer for the Harriet the Spy film?
But if you can't, but this is, I've got something, Tom. That's the backup. What you've just said is the backup.
Why
but
is that
if
the
you
backup?
Can, because you trust me, you'll like this. If you can get Maggie's rumbly tummy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Can we take us out with Maggie's rumbly tummy?
Let's
I don't
do
think
it.
You got it on the microphone, though.
Yeah.
I don't think you did. Oh, yeah, let's just do that. Right.
I gotta go, guys. I got a doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
All right, see you, Maggie.
See you later, Maggie. See you, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Some kids collect insects. Others collect dolls. Harriet M. Welch collects secrets.
What? What? What was that?
Shake it up, take a sip, and wish for what you like most in the world.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.